You're listening to the Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Highmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm happy to be here today to be able to sit down with the one, the only, Mr. Florian Geyer to start breaking down a little bit of the insanity of the modern world. So, Florian, as my fellow traveler on this Lovecraftian horror hellscape, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. It's the East of St. Nicholas, so it's optimistic.
There you go. Well, we are here as always to reinforce that optimism. Because we should always be in a positive mood. So, Florian, I want to kick things off by talking about the Twitter bannings that, of course, are happening. I was banned off Twitter last year, but the massive shutnings of everyone from, like, Jared Taylor. Like, Jared Taylor was too controversial. No offense to him, but I'm just saying, like, if there's a guy, you know, this is being put under the inciting to violence and stuff like that. Jared Taylor isn't exactly the violent type, but they're shutting down a lot of Twitter accounts of just really anyone who's pro-white. You know, there's some survivors, you know, like Richard Spencer and others, but Hunter Wallace, you know, Occidental Descent is gone. Dr. Hill from the League of the South is gone. Trad Youth, Trad Worker, gone. We lost a lot of our guys, actually. So what does this mean to you? What do you think these bans mean?
Well, I actually had my Twitter account suspended several months ago, and I did not go through the process to recover it because, you know, they wanted biometric ID and a contract in blood and that kind of business. But what I think right. That's obviously – yeah, it's pretty getting away pretty cheap, I suppose, dealing with these type of demons. I guess this – I mean, it comes down to this. It's just that the enemy will use whatever forces are in their arsenal in order to oppress us and to prevent our propaganda from spreading, because that's what they're really worried about, is that our worldview, our message, not only constitutes a opposition or an impediment in their plans, whether it is to make money or to engage in the political process, but the shift in worldview that we present is a total and radical break from the entire set of propaganda that they've erected in order to control our behavior. Is essentially a break from the modern world. And so because the modern world is essentially built on falsehood and lies, and any attempt to scratch this or to disturb it is kind of too much for this Leviathan, for this type. And so the only way in which they can preserve their monopoly on thought is to penalize that thought crime, which attacks it. So, I mean, not really surprising. It's going to continue. And I think we should just kind of expect every level of perfidy and evil to be produced by our enemies. So it's pretty standard stuff.
Well, and, you know, what's interesting, when it comes into how they're trying to stop us, they want to use threats, they want to silence us, but we're just so painfully right. I mean, that's kind of the amazing thing, right? Because I was reading just this morning, you know, 4/5 of Czechs are against migrant quotas. They are absolutely opposed. In Slovakia, of course, their neighbor. 81% in Czech Republic, 82% in Slovakia are opposed to accepting Muslim migrants. And Poland, based Poland, not you know, to be offensive towards the Poles, but they're only 74%. It's like the Czech Republic and Slovakia are more hardcore. And you think about what they've done on this migrant issue, right? So it's always in the media. They're always promoting it. They're always promoting multiculturalism. They're always promoting homosexuality. They're pushing all this. And now the EU is threatening financially to hurt these, you know, rather modestly sized countries. So they have to take these Muslim migrants. And the people are actively opposed to it because the truth will always win out. The truth is more powerful than threats or bribery or stuff like that, because it's just correct. It speaks to your soul. And that's why they have to try and shut down nationalist thought. But I was thinking about this in terms of our, you know, when we were visiting the Czech Republic, the fact that there were no protesters against the event we went to, Florian, and that I got to speak at. And I guess it's because 81% of people agree with us. That's a pretty good percentage. I mean, I wish it was 7% more, but, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, of course. And I mean, even the Czech Republic, it was remarkable just the amount of popular support that we encountered. I mean, the vast majority of people are not political, but those who had any sort of patriotic sentiment were coming up to shake your hand and all this business. And it was remarkably peaceful. Even the protesters were very cool and postmodernist, and they didn't really care, like, if we were Nazis or not. And it was, you were saying something the other day that something like 45% of Vienna voted for the FPÖ in the municipal elections. So, I mean, I think that this, even in, you know, kind of the heart of the cosmopolitan beast, this, you know, Nazi party can still be enjoy popular success. And so I think that you're precisely correct, is that we're dealing with the forces of natural law, of human anthropology, what's inherent to our nature. And so when we're dealing with these forces, I mean, the adversary is trying their very, very best to destroy these forces and to erect a new model of man, which is bereft of these inconvenient elements. But it's not possible without, you know, I guess, organic modification. And then the individual ceases to become a man. And so exactly, the second option for them is merely to suppress as violently as possible the truth, because it's anathema to them.
Yeah, no, I mean, 110%. And, you know, it's kind of funny. So we had this interview this weekend with our Ohio chapter. We had some of our folks come together because we were having one of our, you know, monthly camping trips. It was a lot of fun. And we had this reporter come out, and okay, I'm gonna say this on air, and I apologize to be a little not safe for work for a second, but this reporter was a bitch. And I don't like to curse on my show, but there's no other word I could properly use to explain. And it was amazing because, you know, I've dealt with Jew reporters, I've dealt with you know, reporters of color, I've dealt with all sorts of people, right? And usually, even if they absolutely hate my guts and you know, hate everything I believe in and our party believes in, then they can at least be respectful, right? Like, there's a degree of like respect, or professionalism, just bare bones professionalism. And we had this white Gentile reporter from a female from, Chicago. And, it was amazing to watch. And this is what it all comes down to, right? Everything is about truth. That as we were explaining our positions, she would like get physically angry. And then she would like make snarky comments, right? Like the truth actively repelled her. And at one point she goes, I've heard this before. And, I leaned in and I said, oh, you mean in 1933? And she like glared really hard. And I whispered, that's when Hitler took power in Germany. And she went, I know, that's cute. And like was like freaking out. Right. But it was very weird because it was very like, attempted to be a normal conversation, but like the truth was like actively making her upset, and she didn't even have any positions. She tried to argue, but she didn't really have anywhere to go with it, right? So it just ends up being emotional. It just ends up being the passions let loose. So I've never like walked away from an interview before, actually. But we did this time with this Newsweek reporter, because she was just like so actively hostile. And not in a, you know, not in like a tough questions sort of way, not in like a, oh man, I don't know how to answer that. Or, oh no, she went there. Just more like unpleasantness. Right. And so my point in all this in terms of this story is they can't handle it. They literally cannot handle being confronted with like factual statements that make sense. And they just lose it. So, I mean, Florian, what do you think on that? That you've got like the idea of like a woman who is one of our people, right? Member of our family, who like loathes herself so much that the idea of standing up for her extended family is so abhorrent to her. She has to like be rude and like break the protocols of her own job. You know, like it's kind of amazing. But like, what do you think drives people to that?
Well, I mean, I think there's usually a combination of a couple of different factors. Usually, primarily, I'm going to go to economic. I mean, because people are able to sustain that kind of sneer imperialist attitude and be supported economically to do so, and they choose to do so. Because as soon as there's no market for that kind of demand, I mean, you can't, you know, you can't get by on being a housewife and be a chronic bitch all the time, right? Excuse me for cursing and all this business. But essentially, I mean, yeah, I think it's just like that's the number one, is we can never have any of this bourgeois decadence without the kind of reigning capitalist economic system, which creates these, you know, artificial know-nothing places for these scum of the earth, like these waste of space journalists. I mean, I think it also, I mean, number two is just that the, you know, of course, the propaganda, the indoctrination, I mean, it's what the essence of something being satanic is that it's an inversion, right? And so this is back to like kind of the woman question, is that the precisely instead of helping her people, instead of supporting her people, we see the exact opposite, where it's just this kind of sneering indignation with no substance. There's not even an intellectual rebuttal. There's not an attempt to engage. There's just, you know, an indignant position. And that's, I mean, we keep using this term, this sneering imperialism, but it is, I mean, it's no higher than just the most vulgar of Anglo sentimentalities applied to the liberal worldview. And that's why that they must, they scream and they kick and they curse and they yell and they shut us down from these social media platforms, because the only way that they can maintain this with legitimacy is if they're seen to have the moral high ground. If we're the Nazis, we're the, you know, the devils, right? The heretics, so to speak. And they're the champions of liberal orthodoxy and, you know, ecumenism and charitability and all this business. But it's, you know, it's a false religion. It's a false moral worldview. And this is why, this is what our biggest work is we just have to get people to stop caring. It's when she can be, you know, a sneering a bitch, excuse me, right? And nobody cares. That's when we've won.
Well, and that's actually funny, because Tony Hovater and I were the ones primarily being interviewed, along with some of our younger comrades. And we just started bancing her really bad. And that made her really angry. You know, I asked her if she wanted a Snickers, because she seemed a little hungry, because, you know, the Snickers campaign, you know, you're not yourself when you're hungry. And she didn't like that. But her cameraman thought it was really funny. So, you know.
Based cameraman, Chad cameraman versus the Virgin reporter.
Dude, I've literally seen that time after time. I was being interviewed back at Towson, I guess in like 2012, for the White Student Union, or 2013. And, CNN was, you know, talking about, you know, our crime patrols. And at one point, the reporter was like, you know, this issue, it's not black and white. And, I sneered at him and I said, yeah, I see what you did there. And, he was, and then like the cameraman literally burst out laughing, like audibly, like, It's just a good time. Like we just have to ban these people, because you're right. It's like the demons, right? They're already defeated. These reporters, these scumbags, are already defeated, and we just need to mock them, because they're not even worth like getting angry over. They're just bad freaking people. And we've already beaten them. Their ideas have already failed. They're not going to be able to succeed, because they're built on lies. And you know, it's something I think is interesting. It just came out, you know, I live here in Indiana, and Indianapolis is a rather violent city. And the Indianapolis paper has written, like, the Indy Star and some others have written, like, probably a dozen articles in the past year about, like, the Nazis in southern Indiana is, like, the biggest threat to Indiana. And, like, oh, my God, and clutching of pearls, you know, as far as the eye can see. And it turns out that for the third year in a row, Indianapolis has set a homicide record. It's really super exciting. You know, we have been able, you know, we did it. Good job, Hoosiers. We were able to kill over 100 fellow Hoosiers. Well, they probably not fellow Hoosiers in Indianapolis, but you know what I mean. But I do think it's like interesting that their entire worldview, because what do we do in southern Indiana? We take care of our families. We just got 9 bags worth of clothing donations for our East Kentucky clothes drive that we were sorting just the other night here in southern Indiana. And you know, we just try and be a positive influence in the community. While in Indianapolis, you've got, you know, almost all black gangbangers, Latino gangbangers as well, like shooting each other in record numbers, killing women, killing children. It's a bad situation, but that's not the most dangerous part of Indiana. That's not the thing that everyone needs to be worried about. No. It's the dudes doing the coat drive in southern Indiana that think white people have a right to exist. The media, their priorities are so skewed because they don't actually care about what's good for people. They care what's good for their masters and for their agenda.
Yeah, and I mean, that just goes back to it. It's about moral legitimacy. I mean, this is really just the critical point that we need to hammer home, because this is the essence of the fourth generation of warfare, is we destroy the moral legitimacy and credibility of the regime, and we accumulate and accrue that quality for ourselves. And so this is the only solution to kind of break people out of the snares and entrapments and mechanisms of control that have been put on their soul by these priests of Baal. Because once somebody is, you know, can just say, me no frego, I don't give a damn, when they're confronted with these, you know, power words of racism or so on, then the problem evaporates. It ceases to be an issue. The only punishment that they can mete out is either physical or economic. Because once you've spiritually seceded, you've rebuked them and stood up for justice within your soul, then there's naught that they can do to oppress your eternal state, rather. And so, I mean, I think the reason why, you know, the TWP is so threatening is because it understands this principle and proposes to do just exactly that in an environment where the state is increasingly unwilling or unable, or maliciously unable, I think purposefully unable in many instances, to provide these services to the downtrodden and the needy. And they certainly don't care what kind of shirt we're wearing.
Well, yeah, and you know, the sort of thing that, as we push forward, we just need to not care. I mean, because as long as we care about the names they call us, we're letting them define things, right? And Sun Tzu talks about this. When it comes to military tactics, if you let your enemy pick the battlefield, you've already lost. It's already game over. The best thing you can do is pick the battlefield and to be able to know yourself and to know your enemy, and you'll be successful in every battle, right? This is so key, to know yourself, to know your enemy, and to be able to pick the ground on which you engage. And for a long time, the media has been allowed to, you know, all you have to say is, you know, to a conservative or reactionary is, you're racist, you're a homophobe, you're a xenophobe. There's a lot of phobes, right? And I don't think any of us are scared of gays. I don't think any of us are scared of immigrants and stuff like that. We just don't like things, right? Difference than a phobia of being scared of something and simply not liking it, right? Like, I really don't like pineapple on pizza. I don't have a phobia of it. I just think it's gross. Right. And, we just need to not care and just push forward, because that really does liberate us. If you don't care what the media says about you, if you don't care what some Jew professor says, you don't care what the Antifa say, then you're really free. Like, and your freedom begins with you, right? It's not just political. It's not just economic. It literally begins inside of you to break those chains of control that they've established on top of you. You just break free of those, and then you are the one who is charting your own destiny. You're the one that defines who you are, and then you work with members of your community to make differences. And speaking of making differences, you know, doing a lot of callbacks to our visit to Europe, you know, a few weeks ago, the Freedom Party just it was just announced yesterday. They just won a bunch of key posts in the new government, and you know, Hans Christian Strache is going to be the vice chancellor of all of Austria. And they're going to be running the interior, defense, and health and social services ministries. So they're, you know, working in a coalition with, like, the Conservative Party, where on one hand I say, you know, to hell with the right wing, as Commander Rockwell would say, you know, but at the same time, being able to have a dramatic amount of influence in the Austrian government is pretty cool. Especially when it comes to defense. I would love to see their definition of defense be putting Austrian soldiers on the border to make sure that the invaders can't make it in, and rounding these people up and instantly deporting them. But, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Florian, because a supposed far-right party, right, and the Austrian Freedom Party has a lot of amazing people in it, but they have moderated their message in recent years, which I'm not a big fan of, and they've tried to placate the Jews, you know, and I want to talk about that, actually, as our main focus. They've tried to placate the Jews by getting away from, we're not neo-Nazis. We're not far right. You know, we want to be able to move the Austrian embassy to Jerusalem, and we want to work with you against jihad and stuff like that. And it doesn't work. It fundamentally does not work, because Netanyahu is ordering that the Israeli government actually like not engage any Freedom Party ministers or things like that to because they're anti-Semitic and evil and racist and is downgrading relations with Austria. And what that means is fundamentally no amount of cucking to the Jews when it comes to image or presentation. If you cuck to the Jews, well, that's not going to change any of their policies. They're still going to hate you if you're at any way, shape, or form a nationalist. So what are your thoughts on the Austrian Freedom Party winning, but then the Jews actually downgrading relations with Austria over the Freedom Party being in the coalition government?
Well, it was kind of like a surreal experience to see like on the front page of RT, and then to like look at the pictures that I took sitting in his chair in the Austrian Parliament building. So that was kind of neat. I think that it comes back to these things that we've talked about every time, basically on the show or on Mysterium, that it comes up, is that the utility of parliamentary politics is real to a certain degree. Even this is one of the huge flaws with accelerationism, is that the liquidation of the social conditions or the degeneration of the material welfare of a country actually means the degeneration of social conditions for your people. So if more immigrants get in and rape women, well, that's your sister, your mother. So that's the end result of those accelerationist species of policies, is that there's a significant decline in the quality of living for your own people. And in America, we don't really understand this because we have this disgusting individualism and we believe in abstract nations and things like white America. But in Austria and the Czech Republic, where they still have intact nations and folk, whether through inertia or consciousness, they do understand these principles. And so it's a good thing, hopefully, if the FPÖ can, you know, just ensure basic border security or basic, you know, demographic resistance to the ongoing invasion of the Austrian Republic. But as you say, of course, you know, the Republican democracy is at the mercy of the masters of coinage, of money, and that is predominantly the Jews. And so the democratic system will never save the Austrian people. Parliamentarism will never provide a lasting solution to the woes and the spiritual malaise which has enveloped the great land of Austria. Rather, only a national rebirth or a revitalization of the people's spirit will succeed in throwing off the shackles of Mohammedanism and cultural Marxism and decadent Viennese Jewry. And so, yeah, I mean, it's you know, same story, different day. It's basically what Adolf Hitler was dealing with at the beginning of the 20th century.
Literally, it all goes back to Hitler, because that's a moment of been there, done that, got the T-shirt and the armband sort of thing. And that's what kind of blows my mind, right? Because the media will actually put forward and say, like, oh, like, you know, you're you know, what are the terms they use, like neo-Nazi, right? That you're, you know, a neo something. But no, you know, National Socialism is the political application of natural law as created by God for how society is governed. And the thing is, we've done this before, because this is an eternal battle. The battle between good and evil, between harmony and chaos, between order and anarchy. I mean, this is the sort of thing, like when we reference Hitler or Kadrianu or, you know, the other leaders of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, it's not just because that's like the most defining point of human history, although it is one of the most important. It's the fact that the exact same thing we're dealing with was dealt with there. That this, it doesn't change, because this is an eternal battle between good and evil, and you have to pick a side. And our enemies do the same tricks. It's the same people. It's the same people, always the same people. And we are simply continuing the legacy by carrying the torch, as our ancestors have for literally millennia. For thousands of years, this battle has been waging of the individual, of radical materialism, of secularism, of degeneracy, of globalism. And this goes back to the Tower of Babel. You know, we've had the EU and the American Empire essentially before, trying to destroy all diversity within human beings, destroy the organic nature of our entire species. We had it at Babel. Like, we've had this for thousands of years, and we're just going to keep, you know, pushing forward. This is the sort of thing that is really, really key for us to know that we are not something new. This is a continuation of a struggle that will keep pushing forward, and that we're all participants in, and we must raise our children and our grandchildren to participate in.
Absolutely. What is essential here is that the driving factor of our victory is faith. If you're a Christian and you have faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, then you already have faith in the victory that he has won upon the cross. There is no wavering. There's a dogmatic, a revelatory assurance of the faith. In fact, by the resurrection of Christ from the dead, we've seen the vanquishing, the conquest of life over death. So there is a permanent, ontological, real, metaphysical victory of life in man over death through the victory of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so in the political realm, it's possible that we might all be killed, but faith in the victory, right, is necessary for any modicum of success, whether it's in this life or in the next. And so the key to overthrowing the, you know, Judaic shackles that bind you is to escape their moral paradigm and have faith in the triumph of natural law, of truth over lies, of beauty over ugliness, of goodness over evil. And this is why the struggle must be spiritual. This is why ourselves must be spiritual. We must be superior to the enemy in our faith and in our drive and instantiate this, you know, in our lives. This is the path of struggle to victory.
Well, on this, Florian, can you give our folks, in the last like couple minutes here, what they should be doing for Christmas for our Christian comrades, because the spiritual struggle is so important? What should they be doing as they're preparing to celebrate the coming of Christ, right? This is such an important date in the Christian calendar. This, and of course, Pascha. What should folks be doing to prepare to be spiritual warriors?
Well, so right now we're in the period of what's called Little Lent or the Winter Fast or Advent. And so in all traditional European cultures, Western and East, before the gradual reforms introduced in the West, everybody fasted during this period. And so, but the fasting can be understood as it's asceticism, it's discipline, right? So the period leading up to the appearance of the birth of our Savior, the Logos becoming flesh and so on, is a time to just discipline yourself spiritually. I mean, so fast primarily, right? Abstain from food, but specifically the pleasures and attachments of this world. You know, and fasting is not about food, it's about spiritual mastery and self-control. Right. So do what you're able to your limit, to push yourself. It's like lifting. And in fact, this is exactly how the church fathers describe fasting and praying is analogous to what an athlete does training for a competition. So then it's intensify the spiritual work. Pray more. Right. Hold to your prayer rule. Go to liturgy. Right. Keep the church calendar. Observe these spiritual matters which build up the castle of our lives and so on. And then I would say also is charity. Advent is primarily a time of love and fellowship with your family, with your community, with your friends, with your church, where you reciprocate the great blessings which have been bestowed upon you throughout the year. It's also a time of anamnesis, of remembrance, where we are awaiting the coming of the herald of the victory, of the great king who saves us from death, where we recount all of those who have come before us, who have struggled in the desert for 40 days, awaiting the light of salvation of the promised land. All those martyrs who spilled their blood for righteous causes, who never saw the sweet taste of earthly victory. We commemorate their struggle and their enduring faith into the next life, even as we consummate the appearance of the Savior 2,000 years post-hence.
Amen to that, man. Well, Florian, thank you so much. Thank you to my dear listeners, and I'm going to look forward to being back tomorrow with another edition of The Daily Traditionalist. Remember, gird yourself spiritually, physically, because this war takes each of us first to discipline yourself, to be able to provide hope to our brothers and our sisters, and be able to, in everything we do, secede from this evil empire, starting in your mind and your heart, so we can build a new and free nation for our people. So thank you so much for listening. I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Hail victory!
Listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.